All right, quick word about Troll Co. Clothing. Here's what I actually love about this brand. It was started by two guys who worked the oil patch. Not marketers, not guys with corporate pitch decks. Workers. They looked around and could not find any clothing that represented the life they were living. So they made it themselves. Workwear, tees, hoodies, hats. Good quality stuff. The whole brand is built around a phrase you have probably heard. Dirty hands, clean money. The idea that hard, honest work is how you build a good life. And I think most people listening to this show understand that better than they're ever given credit for by the sports media machine. So if you want your gear from a brand that actually means something and was not assembled by a focus group, go check them out. Trollco.com/Zabe. That's TROLLCO.com/Zabe. And use code ZABE25 for 25% off your first order. The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag. And why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.
He is part of the fabric of baseball in the biggest city in this country.
For many generations, there will only be one, the voice of the New York Yankees.
The Golden Pipes, John Sterling.
Stepping up to the microphone is the voice of the New York Yankees. Here is John Sterling.
Well, Susan, I thank you. And once again, good afternoon, everyone.
Swung on it, hit in the air to deep right center. It is high, it is far, it is gone. Burn, baby, burn.
A thriller by Godzilla.
The Bambino, the Giambino.
Robbie Cano, the Don't. Oh, he's positively swish-alicious. El Capitan.
Let the Garney party begin.
It's an A-bomb from A-Rod.
The most happy fella.
A Stantonian home run.
Swung on and popped up again. Off third. Hayes has room. Hayes makes the catch. Ball game over. World Series over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
This is the Zabe Cast, hosted by a Pop-Tart loving kid from the mean streets of McLean, Virginia. And since you probably have other, more important podcasts to waste your time on, screw those AirPods in tight and let's go.
Here we go. That was the unmistakable and iconic voice of one John Sterling, who passed away on Monday after a life that is beyond charmed, but one of the greatest of all time, getting to call all those Yankee highlights and living a good long while. Andy Pollin joins us right out of the gate because as soon as I saw the news, Andy, I know you would know a lot about John and WFAN and the Yankees from your time up there. What do you say about the legend passing today?
Well, I mean, among the many things that in reading about him is that he did over 5,000 consecutive games. He had triplets. On the day his triplets were born, he did a Yankee game that night and then traveled with the team after the game was over. Now, damn, that may not fly these days, but in 2000, there wasn't social media like there is now, and it didn't go viral. But his dedication was unbelievable. And, you know, he was the voice of the Yankees for almost 36 years. He didn't get the job until he was 50 years old. 50 years old is when most of us think about slowing down. He was just launching the most important part of his career. It was incredible.
87 years old. He has called so many games. Now, does he belong in the pantheon of Vin Scully, Ernie Harwell, Jack Buck, Harry Carey, or is he one step below that?
Well, I mean, I probably would put him more with Harry Carey because of, you know, more. And he got a lot of criticism for this, for shtick. You know, the Yankees win. And
as you heard in the highlights, yeah. Israel, the cutesy names, the Bermanette right. twisting of the names, obviously.
Right, right. The Scully and Harwell, they're like royalty. They're godlike in what they did. Bernie Harwell, people like that. Those people are so revered. Sterling was you know, he took some heat from critics like Phil Mushnick of the New York Post, for being too, you know, too shticky. About the American pastime, but he was a genuine guy. I actually met him before he became voice of the Yankees. When we started WFAN in 1987, Pete Franklin was to be the afternoon host. And a couple of weeks before the station was supposed to go on the air, he had a heart attack. And as the man who hired him, the late, great John Channon, said, yeah, he saw the numbers and it knocked him out. So you make a lot of money in those days. So they had substitute hosts, and Sterling was one of them. And the update person at that time was Susan Waldman. Now, Susan had never done updates before. She struggled with it. You know, it's a tough job to step into with somebody for experience. I'd been doing it for 10 years. It wasn't easy for me. And she had a tough time with it. But clearly there was something there between Sterling and Susan. At the time, Susan was married, Sterling was not, and he was like 47, 48 years old. He was wearing a shirt that was open to the navel with a Sterling silver S hanging from a chain on his chest.
Crossy,
there.
Huh?
And a bachelor. And the interaction between them on the air, there was something there, and he said something as he left the studio while she was doing the update to the all-male group in what we called the bullpen, the newsroom of the station, which would be considered inappropriate, but clearly it was an interest in Susan. And the fact that they became almost like a married couple for 20 years later on, right. He later married, she later divorced, but they never got together as a couple, but made, you know, incredible magic on the radio for 20 years.
So he held the job for 30 years, you say?
36.
Okay. So many people who are younger listening to this podcast right now have no idea that the Yankees were an abject joke of a franchise in the early 90s. They had five straight losing seasons. One, two, three, four. Four straight losing seasons. They had not won the division from 81 until 94. When Buck Showalter won Manager of the Year. Now, they had some winning seasons in there, but you had to win your division. Otherwise, you know, you were shit out of luck. But they were really, really bad. And then Sterling comes along right around that time, and he presided over this amazing renaissance of the mighty New York Yankees. And so, therefore, I listen to Sterling and I go, he sucks. His voice is thin. It's kind of nasally. He's got all these silly, cutesy, stupid names that are annoying to me. In his later years, he would mess up fly balls and call them home runs when they weren't. And I'm like, I don't get it. But here's the thing. In all of broadcasting, Andy, the best job to get and the hardest, but if you can get it, it's gold, is to be the baseball play-by-play voice in a baseball-crazed city, which New York is, with a franchise and a team that wins and wins and wins and wins. And if you do, it doesn't matter really what you sound like, because they're not hiring any new John Sterlings to do play-by-play. They're all very polished, deep tone. They're sort of like Joe Davis, who does now, you know, yeah. Fox. He's very clean, Joe Davis, but he's antiseptic almost. So
yeah.
Listen,
yeah,
if you walk into that chair, it doesn't matter if you are quote unquote good, because Susan Waldman is also not good. Like, why would you want to listen to some grandmotherly New York woman calling
from Boston, And that is an unusual booth, or was, in that Susan doesn't do play by play. Almost every other booth, even when you have an ex jock in there, he'll do three innings.
So she just does color. She analyzes baseball, having never played the game.
Right. And Sterling, well, she's a very good reporter. She'd been a Yankee beat reporter for WFAN for a long time. She knows the players. She knows a lot about the game.
But you're not breaking scoops on the air.
No, but they were more critical than some groups. They got away with that, whereas, you know, others are told, hey, tone it down. The crazy thing about Sterling was he was hired in 1989 by George Steinbrenner personally. Steinbrenner, you know, had been in the ABA. He had a team in Cleveland at one point. So he's familiar with Sterling, who had done the Nets games, and he also did the Islanders. So he hired him to be the Yankees broadcaster. You mentioned how bad they were in the late 80s and early 90s. Well, Steinbrenner got suspended a year later in 90 to 92.
Yeah.
And rather than do what they always did under Steinbrenner, trading prospects like, hello, Mariano Rivera and Derek Jeter, Gene Michael, who was running the team, held on to them. And that was the nucleus of all those championship teams in the later part of the decade.
Yeah. So now that he has passed, who will get that gig and how furious will the jockeying be?
Well, no, he left early last season. So Dave Sims.
Oh, Dave Sims is now the guy. Okay.
Yeah, Dave Sims, who had actually, he was also a WFAN. I don't think he was an original, but he came along pretty early. And then he did the Mariners for quite a few years.
Yes.
And then when the job came open, when Sterling left, he became the voice of the Yankees. So, but here's the thing about and I like Dave. I've known Dave a long time as well. Dave got some heat because early in his tenure, he took a week off early in the season. It's like, hey, you know, it's built into the contract. You get time off. And you go, whoa, look at what Sterling did. 5,000 consecutive games.
Yeah. Dave Sims from Philly. So he's East Coast. He's not particularly New York. So I guess New Yorkers, they're not totally tribal in that. We got to have a New York voice.
No.
Voice of the Yankees.
No. I don't think so. No. I mean, look, Red Barber. The legendary Red Barber was from Georgia and did the Yankee games for many, many years.
Okay.
So I don't think they're that provincial.
All right. So you would agree, though, that this is the best gig to have if you can get it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I know several people who are, you know, play-by-play people for a living. Charlie Slows is one of them. He did the Bullets for a long time, and he's been doing the Nats since they came here in 2005. Mark Boyle's a good friend of mine. He does the Pacer games. He's been doing those games for about 35 years. NBA is a little different because about half as many games. But yeah, I would say baseball is probably the premier play-by-play job.
Okay. And they're hard to get, obviously. And it takes somebody dying or finally retiring at 87 years old.
Yeah. But I mean,
like this to open up. And there's so many people out there that are dying to just get into that chair and are really good at calling baseball games.
Yeah. Well, look, and for some, it's just like baseball. You get in the minor leagues and you may not get out. And I remember when Gary Cohen became the second voice of the Mets, Bob Murphy, who was an original with the Mets in 62, was still doing it. So this would have been late 80s, early 90s. And he was in his 30s and they said, look at that. You know, look at, but he was that good. Doing minor league games in like South Carolina, and now has been the anchor of the TV thing that Jerry Seinfeld loves. A lot of other people with Keith Hernandez and who's the other one? There's another ex Met on there as well.
Yeah,
so that's a big
podcast team. Yeah. I did play by play for UC Santa Barbara back in the day, 1992 to 1995. I loved it very much. I thought I was pretty decent at it. I got to call one NBA game when Dave
Chung,
the Iron Man, thank you, Andy, the Iron Man of Wizards, was out sick at the last minute. Nobody else, they just tabbed me to do it. I had a little bit of experience. I think I did a decent enough job at it. So I feel like I had a cup of coffee in the bigs. I would have loved to have been that play-by-play man for his team, but I got out of it kind of early, young, because I just looked at the pathways. And I said, man, I can't wait my whole life to be the voice of the Hornets or something.
Look at whoever wants to be the next voice of Maryland sports. Johnny Holiday has been doing Maryland football and basketball since 1979. He's in his mid-80s and doesn't seem interested in giving it up. So you got to wait.
Right. I also saw a stat that apparently John Sterling has called 3% of all games in MLB history.
Really?
That includes all games for all teams, even those prior to the first ever radio broadcast of a ball game on August 5th, 1921.
How about Vin Scully? How many? What's the percentage for him?
I don't know if it's television or radio. Vin did a lot of television later on. Was Sterling also television simulcast?
No, he didn't do television, but I believe it was 67 years for Scully. He got into the booth with the Brooklyn Dodgers in his early 20s.
Yeah. this guy, Ryan M. Spader, the bad stats man, 66,000 followers. Mm-hmm. Says this. So
wow.
It doesn't seem right. It suffice to say he called a shitload of baseball games. And
not only that, when you're doing the Yankees, you're in the postseason all the time.
Right.
That's another couple hundred games that a lot of guys don't get.
Yeah. The other notable thing broadcast wise is the Junkies here in DC had their 30th anniversary on the nose May 4th. 30 years ago, they were on the radio for the first time, and they're doing their victory lap all year long. I asked EB, I go, so is there a big deal on Monday for your 30th anniversary? He goes, no, not really. He said, there's little events throughout the year. He said, they want to monetize it the most they can. So yeah. They're stretching this thing out. But yes, if you can also become a morning show staple in the market in radio, where people just love you and you get big enough audience, you can kind of mail it in. I'm not saying these guys are mailing it in, but I'm just saying that you get so big, it's hard to not just keep and hold the audience forever. So good for those guys, because, you know, they got jostled around along the way. There was some definitely knives out moments with Don Geronimo, who used to be the big FM DJ in this market, trying to, you know, basically kill their career, and they survived. So good for them.
Yeah. Yeah, they moved around a little bit. They were on WHFS for a while, started out as a cable access show. Right. And a couple of them, I think, have law degrees. Like, they were looking at other careers, and this, you know, sort of happened. And then WJFK got more. Actually, what happened, I believe, I think the timing is this, that they had the Redskins. We had the Redskins for the first three seasons, 92, 93, 94. And then they went to JFK, and so I think they were looking to build more programming around them, and they started doing weekend sports shows, and they moved their cable access show over there. And good for them. I mean, look, people like routine in their life. They like to know that every morning they can wake up and they can hear the Junkies, and in some cases, their whole lives. My son-in-law is 37 years old. He's a listener. He's been a listener since he was in high school. So he likes that consistency.
I have more than a few people that reach out to me via email and say, hey, Zabe, I've been listening to you since I was being driven to school in the back seat of my dad's car.
Oh, yeah.
And like, damn it, I don't like
it. That's a compliment. Look, there
are a compliment, but I mean, come on, man.
When did we start? 2000? That's 26 years ago. A guy is like my son-in-law's age, mid-30s, he was, you know, 10, 11, and dad was driving him to soccer practice or, you know, wherever, picking up from school and listening to us in the back seat while he was driving home. The competition wasn't what it is now. You know, you didn't have Sirius XM. You didn't have podcasts. You know, if you wanted to hear about sports, we were it.
Yeah. Did you see on Inside the NBA, they had a graphic of Gone Fishing with Mike Vrabel and Diana Rossini?
Oh, they did. Ooh.
Oh, they went there on that. And Pro Football Talk and Mike Florio reports saying, for the most part, ESPN has tiptoed around the situation involving Vrabel and Rossini, formerly of The Athletic, formerly of ESPN. But Inside the NBA studio show jumped into the fray with both feet after the Celtics were eliminated. Now, that show is produced, and they have full creative control from the Atlanta side with the TNT guys that they brought over. I just wonder if ESPN's squirming a bit on this. It seems like
I don't know. I don't know, but Barkley's attitude is, and he goes on various shows all over the place, his attitude is, I don't need this job. You want to get rid of me? Go ahead. I think that's part of his success, too. I think that helps the product. But he is making $21 million a year. And, you know, he could go a little bit too far. And
I don't need this job. There's no other job that would pay you $21 million, though.
Right. But he says, I don't need it. I have plenty of money. If they fired him, somebody else would pick him up in a second. He knows that. So
did you, well, somebody else, who's somebody else?
Well, he could go, he could do NFL. He could do anything.
NFL. Yeah. People are going to give a shit about what Barkley says about the NFL.
Half the time, he doesn't know what's on the air with his own games. He's not watching it. The less he knows about what's going on, the funnier he is.
I guess so. Did you like the Derby?
Yes, I love the Derby. Actually, love the Derby. Last the first, was that great?
It was great, and it recorded the highest ratings it's ever had. Now, Nielsen's been bumping up the ratings. By the way, they're capturing audience now, but still. I mean, horse racing, like baseball, like boxing, you can't kill it. You know, it's reportedly dying for years. Guess what? You can't kill what's already dead. They've buried baseball, horse racing, boxing over and over and over again. They're still around. And even though the overall Triple Crown may not be as healthy as it once was, and I know that the track there in Pimlico for the Preakness is in disrepair, just the Derby itself has never been bigger as an event, in my opinion.
Yeah, the race is 2 minutes, and they do like 6 hours of programming around it, and people watch it.
Well, and it's not boring programming. I think it's beautifully shot pieces, some interesting stuff about, you know, the horses and the trainers, and obviously the celebrities and the debutantes. Did you see Belichick there with his child?
Oh yeah, yeah, being led around by Jordan. Oh yeah, that's a common scene these days.
Oh yeah. God. When is that going to end, do you think?
Probably it'll end badly. You know, she'll at some point realize, okay, time to get off this bus. I need to get on to somebody, you know, who's better for football.
She's going to go find another coach to jump onto, another.
Oh, yeah. Coach. She's good at this, right? I mean,
I don't know if there's a second act for Jordan Hudson.
Do you think the pursuing was done primarily by Belichick or by Jordan Hudson?
Jordan Hudson.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Came at him like a missile.
Yeah.
And like a money-seeking, heat-seeking missile. And knew exactly what sort of a pseudo bullshit woo-woo backstory she had to justify this insane age difference and this insane corpulence difference. Because Belichick's an old fucking male.
You get on me for fat shaming. I'll get out of the way for that one.
Yeah, okay. All right. And then lastly, I had to have you comment on this because I know that, you know, you like him. He's a professional sort of friend of yours. Jeff Perlman asked why Jay Glazer gets a free pass for his intimate relationship with sources and Rossini is not. Perlman, what's the deal there, Andy? Come on, man.
Yeah, well, look, but he has had that for a long time. He trains with them. I mean, is Jay Glazer's influence as an insider as big as it used to be, or is he just sort of this character?
Guys really have. Anytime there's a big wow story in the NFL, none of these guys have it or gals have it.
Schefter will get it.
No, but, yeah. Even Jeffrey gets caught flat-footed. The stories that people don't want you to know, the trades they're working on in deep secret that they need to keep secret for it to happen, all these insiders are like, oh, shit. And nobody reported on that stuff prior to it coming out. But do you have to explain to your boy Perlman why the sex thing is a lot different than just going to a barbecue with Sean McVay?
Yeah, I think it's different. I was on board with him in that. Early on, I said, well, you know, sitting by the pool and talking to a coach, a man could do that too. But as the shoes began to fall out of the closet, both Berman and I began to look around and go, well, yeah, maybe it's not exactly what it looked like at the beginning.
All right. Andy, I appreciate the emergency pop in for this. And rest in peace, John Sterling. Yankees win.
Good guy, too. I mean, the times that I was around him, he was a very nice man. So great broadcaster, good man.
Despite the giant Sterling Silver S necklace.
Well, I mean, that was a different iteration. We're all young at one point. He was younger and a lot different than he was in his later years.
All right. Thank you, Andy. Appreciate it.
Take care.
When we come back, an old friend And our man about film, Matt Miller, joins us next. You're listening to the Zabecast. Here's a scenario for you. It's a Tuesday night. There's a game on. Maybe it's good, maybe not. Who knows? Could go sideways by the fourth inning. But if you're still parked on the couch, what are you going to do? MyBookie.ag Casino. That's what you do. Slots, blackjack, roulette, right there on your phone. And their live dealer tables are genuinely impressive. A real person dealing cards on a live feed. Feels a lot more like a casino than clicking a computer game, that's for sure. Use promo code ZABE at mybookie.ag. New players get $25 in casino credit on their first deposit automatically. And if your first sports bet loses, they refund it up to $500 in free play. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for all offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid. Matt Miller, it is great to see you, my friend. You're on DEF CON 1, literally days away from having your first child. How is mama to be?
She's having a blast. She's never had more fun being 15 pounds heavier than normal. She believes she's been cursed by witches. She can't wait. We're very excited for this child, but I think anyone who's been through this process knows that the woman hits a phase where it is no longer beautiful. And it is becoming a curse, and it becomes, I can't sleep. Nothing right. is comfortable. My body does weird ripples when the baby moves. Like it becomes a body horror movie. Yeah. And you kind of can't wait to reach the next step.
Yeah. It's something else. I think the period in which a pregnant woman feels beautiful in her pregnancy is a period that lasts about 5 days total of the 9 months, give or take. And it's right when there's just enough of a belly so that you can see you're pregnant, but it's not so big that it's making life miserable on a day-to-day basis. But it comes, it goes, it fades, and then the rest is just a downhill spiral into uncomfortable hell. And you've got to be the father. You got to be the dad. You got to be the husband, the boyfriend, the whatever. Be like, it's okay. What can I get you? Let me get you some food. You know, whatever it takes to calm down. The boiling waters of a pregnancy.
It's like a Groundhog's Day of December 22nd over and over and over and over again, where it's like, you know, I've mixed my metaphors here, but it's like Christmas is coming, but you're stuck on December 21st. And every day is just the same, like any minute now, Santa's going to come. But no, in the meantime, it is just pain and surprise acid reflux and bones hurting that you didn't know could hurt. But we're very excited. The room is all set.
Oh, man, that's all.
We're very excited. It's the most exciting new release of the summer movie season.
It's a hot release. It is absolutely a hot release. Move over, Devil Wears Prada 2. This thing is going to be huge, your baby. By the way, that movie is several hundred million dollars, they say. It's going to do
it came out this past weekend and made more money in its opening weekend than Thunderbolts, the Marvel movie that came out on the same weekend last year. So that's quite the thing right there.
Now I have an idea as to why this is. Ooh. It's a interesting concept with stars in it. And it's beautifully shot with a proper film budget. Who would have thunk? In other words, it's like a real movie again, Matt Miller.
Shot. I think we're giving David Frankel, the director of Collateral Beauty, a little too much credit here. But you're right. It does have a real budget. And I think part of it is it's a movie for an audience, women, that oftentimes gets neglected.
True. But it's a date nightable movie.
100%. It's a movie that a guy can go to as well and be like, you know, I'm not going to have the worst 2 hours of my life.
Right.
And also this movie's esteem has only grown. Like The Devil Wears Prada has only increased in popularity. People forget that movie opened against Superman, the 2006 Superman. And I think at the end of the day, made more money, or at least got closer to making more money. This movie was a hit to begin with, and people have only grown to love it more and more and more. And they're kind of Beetlejuicing it right now, where they're just hitting it right at the right point where people are like, oh, this is exactly what I wanted to return to at this moment.
Shouldn't it have been titled, however, The Devil Still Wears Prada, or The Devil's Prada Fits a Little Bit More Tightly Now,
or The Devil Wears Yves Saint Laurent Now?
Electric Boogaloo, something like that. I don't know.
The Devil Wears Patagonia Now.
Yeah, it's very old school sequels. They would just slap the number on it. They'd be like, here's the movie you know and love. Here's another one. Come get it.
It really is a shame because, I mean, they did the Now You See Me, Now You Don't sequel titling, which should have been the sequel name for the second movie. And then they finally got around to it on the third movie. And it was just like, nah, you missed your chance. It's not fun anymore. You missed the joke.
Yeah. All right. Oh, my. Do you hear that music, Matt Miller?
My God.
Unbelievable. My God, for the first time in forever. Josh Albrecht is on!
Hello, boys!
Son of a bitch!
Music to my ears.
And he's got his lightsaber, and he's got his Star Wars hat.
Hold on, does Josh like Star Wars?
He does indeed. You might be wondering, why did I call this meeting today on May 4, 2026? May the 4th be with you, Josh Albrecht.
And also with you. Let us pray.
Thank you. Let us pray. Good to talk to you again. It's been a hot minute. I think, Josh, this is the first time you and I have done anything collaboratively on the air since, unfortunately, you were fired and then I was fired.
Yeah, it's true. This is the first time. I think one time there was a phoner talking about, I don't know, picking music. But this is the first time since video has existed with the Zabecast.
Yes.
And I've been lucky enough to be on the Zabecast.
That's a good point. Well, I have missed you and your goofy ass humor. I'm happy you and Trevor are doing great on The Fan up there in Wisconsin. Matt Miller misses you dearly as well. He still has to slum it with, you know, Rolston and Billy, you know, who are great guys and they love sports. But let's be honest, Drew and Billy don't like movies quite like we like movies, right?
I mean,
I have to pull them towards pop culture a little bit more.
Drag them along just a bit, right? So, yeah.
I have to be like, did you know that there's a film festival going on right now?
So when was the last time?
Nine movies and likes those nine movies. That's it.
Right, right. So, Josh, when was the last time you talked to Matt?
Boy, two kids ago. It was forever ago that we talked.
That's not true. We recently had a text exchange because you went to go see the Super Mario Galaxy movie.
That's true. Because if you go to a movie theater and don't think about Matt Miller, what are you doing?
That's the kind that I put that on my tombstone. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, it's not always good things. It's like, man, how does Matt enjoy these places? Look at this. It's sticky over here. There's no one here.
My compliments revoked. I hate you now. How dare you insult my temple?
I think I almost sent you a photo last time I was in the theater, which was last Saturday, Matt, because I went to go see the Animal Farm.
Oh, God, Matt. You saw that?
No, I slept through it, but I saw
the nap time. Animated musical of Animal Farm.
He didn't see it. His eyes were blocked.
My daughter loved it, but I wanted to take a picture of the concession prices, and they were outrageous, the concession prices. It was like $12.95 for a soda, basically.
That better come in the popcorn tub if it's $12.95.
It was pretty bad. But anyway, I convene you boys because today is the holiest day on the Star Wars calendar. Josh, I know, is geeked up for it. I am very Star Wars positive. As you know, Josh, I'm just not a fanatic about it. And Matt is, of course, Mr. Movie, so he's got plenty of thoughts on it. There was recently a movie that came out, full-blown in-theaters movie, about the new generation of Star Wars characters being teased out by the remnants of Kathleen Kennedy's reign at Disney, who owns the IP now. And it was called Grogu and the Mandalorian? Is that right?
you've got some timelines mixed up here, I think. Yeah. Grogu, The Mandalorian and Grogu is coming out later this month.
I believe,
on Memorial Day.
Oh, it's not
and
out?
And then I think Kathleen Kennedy is out of Star Wars now. I think she's no longer...
saw this project, though. So I thought the movie came out and was doing very poorly.
So what you probably heard was the early box office tracking. And yeah. Right now, the early box... And that's not the results right now. That's just kind of like where things are predicting to go in terms of ticket sales. Yeah. They look at things like Fandango.
So they're tracking the box office before the movie's even out?
Because they go to like Fandango. Yeah, it's insane. It's like they go to Fandango and the ticket moving websites and they see how those numbers are coming in and they have various algorithms that can tell them, you know, how big or how small something's looking at. Yeah. And they can look at kind of projections from there. And right now, Mandalorian and Grogu, the first Star Wars movie in theaters in
7 years.
Is looking to open less than Solo, A Star Wars Story, which famously was a bomb that killed the Star Wars spinoffs away.
Yeah.
It is interesting to be talking about Star Wars, talking on Star Wars Day and be like, this is kind of a low ebb for Star Wars right now.
I'm going to get Josh's thoughts on this because you're invested in everything, the franchise and all that. First of all, did the algorithm de-weight Josh's 30 tickets he's already pre-ordered on Fandango.com to not assume that there's going to be everybody buying tickets for the movie?
Well, I am interested to see, like, Josh, are you excited for The Mandalorian and Grogu? Because it does seem like there is a Star Wars movie coming out this month and nobody really cares.
Yeah, no one cares. Who cares?
Yeah, it's a really weird place to be with Star Wars.
Yeah, here's what they did, okay? The Star Wars, Disney essentially continued to say, we don't know what to do with Star Wars, but we like money. That's what they've been saying for years. That's what they did with this. The first time they're doing a movie in how long, and they're making it about the TV series that we all watched during COVID. Like, this is what you're putting out right now?
That has run its course.
Correct. Yeah. They haven't done anything. They didn't do anything with the show that made you go, oh, my God, I need more of this. They didn't do any of that. It's just like, we're just going to take, instead of doing season 4 or 5 or 17 or whatever the hell it is of Mandalorian, we're going to just do a movie now. And I'm sitting here going, yeah, you should have done that from the beginning. You did a TV show. And so, no, this thing will absolutely bomb. There will be people like myself, like I will go see it, but there will be plenty of casual Star Wars fans that are going to go, it'll be on Disney Plus eventually.
Yeah, it's going to bomb like a Marvel movie bombs, which is to say it's going to make $200-300 million in America. But when the movie costs $250 million to make, when it's a Star Wars movie and you expect to make $1 billion, that's absolutely not going to cut it. And the time to make a Mandalorian movie was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
People love season one, deservedly so. Season one rules. Season two showed some rust on the armor. And then people forget that those latter Mandalorian seasons got really bad because it became not a Mandalorian series and it became a look at all of the other spinoffs you could be watching. And they totally lost. They Marvelized Star Wars. And across the board, Disney has Marvelized Star Wars to the degree that it is no longer an event. In a decade's time, Star Wars is no longer an event. It is a chore. It is a thing you feel obligated to go see when it comes out. And it's a shame because with Star Wars, when done right, is one of the greatest cinematic experiences a human being can have. And unfortunately, now it's at this point.
What was the last one done right? Josh, what do you think?
That's a controversial question.
That's why I asked it.
I would say Rogue One. Like, if we're going movie,
Rogue One is one of the spinoffs to the main storyline.
Mm-hmm, but it's a good movie.
Right.
So it is. Tortured. That movie was a real mess getting that to the big screen in coherent fashion.
Right. So you get the original trilogy, then you've got the second three, which only appeal to millennials like Josh and maybe you.
The prequels. Yeah.
Those sucked, with
they're great.
with the stupid kangaroo guy. What was that guy's name?
Jar Jar Binks.
All right, what was that again? What did he sound like?
You have innovated in the terrible Jar Jar Binks impression space. That is incredible.
The worst Jar Jar Binks I've ever heard.
It's not a go-to impersonation for me. Okay?
I didn't know we could do worse Jar Jar Binks impression.
Let me hear your Jar
Jar Binks. I just think it was hilarious with the everyone knows the Misa Jar Jar Binks. Like everyone knows that.
Misa,
best friend.
Away. Okay, so the prequels sucked, but got the other millennials.
No, those were fantastic.
Because those were embedded into your childhood, right? You were how old when those
were nostalgic for them.
Yes, but also Ewan McGregor is awesome. And they actually had lightsaber battles, which were cool because people don't realize how in the original trilogy, you had like very few lightsaber battles, and they were like,
they were old fashioned sword fights. They were old fashioned medieval sword fights, right, in the original trilogy.
Jumping or like speed, like it was just like, no. Okay,
yeah, because they were dramatic and you cared, and they had stakes.
So the Darth Maul double red lightsaber battle was the pinnacle. Right,
that one, yes. Yeah, objectively one of the coolest sequences.
Okay,
oh, so from the prequels, which apparently sucked. Right? Oh, weird.
Oh yeah, because I like watching the rest of Episode One about tax embargoes and whatever.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot that every movie that you rate is perfect 100% of the way through. I completely
really forgot. Escalated that argument really well. Way to make the case for your movie, and instead come up with a straw man. Love that for you.
After the Iran war and the Strait of Hormuz started heating up, somebody said, "Oh, tell me again how trade embargoes are boring, huh?"
Yeah, let's focus just on that.
Yeah, because when I walk into a sci-fi fantasy movie, what I'm really there for is like, yeah, give me international trade embargo talk. This is the best.
It kind of matters, though. Pretty important, when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently, Matt Miller doesn't care about the plot or if the story makes sense. Yeah, he just wants a lot of pew, pew, pew.
All right. So then we had the first Disney trilogy, and the first one was pretty much a shot-for-shot remake. Just with modern skill of digital technological innovation, with of course the rise of Daisy Ridley, who I don't think has done any other movies since the Star Wars.
She was in a zombie movie that came out quietly to start this year. She kind of walked her way kind of out of the spotlight. I think by choice on some level, because I don't think anyone's complaints about the of the Disney trilogy are like Daisy Ridley's a bad actress. Like I think she comes away
for stardom. I was like, this girl's on a rocket ship now, and the answer was no. She was everyone was on a rocket ship.
Everybody in those Disney movies, everyone was like, well, these are going to be the big celebrities of the next 2 to 3 decades of our life, and it is not working out.
What's he doing these days, right? Finn. So
residuals.
Residuals, what are you doing? So I liked the first one, even though I know it was fan service, right, Matt? Yes. That's what they call that movie, fan service.
It's the New Hope reskinned. It's basically putting a nice new sheet of paint on the original movie. But that's what we needed at that time. We had to. Yeah. Sorry, I know Josh really likes the prequels, and many people do. Generally speaking, there was a stink coming off those movies of the digital look of them, of the way too intensive political plotting of them, and the kind of uncharismatic acting, the George Lucas dialogue. And The Force Awakens' job was to take the train and put it back on the tracks and to remind people why, general audiences, why they love Star Wars. And I think on those merits, The Force Awakens does a really good job.
Which is what J.J. Abrams did, because he was the director.
He's a very good myth starter. He's not a very good myth finisher, but he's a good myth starter.
Okay, so then that brought us to the second one, which was, in my mind, a fucking abomination.
The worst Star Wars movie in the history.
If you think it's the worst Star Wars movie, I'm sorry. You gotta reassess.
Eight is absolutely the worst movie. The whole thing sucks balls.
I don't think that is an incorrect statement. Like, there's a lot of stuff in that movie that rules. And like visually, that movie's incredible. Does Luke everything Green, land?
Green ogre milk on the island that he was living
on. Yeah, he's a weird old man. That's perfect. It's funny.
Yeah, it was hilarious. I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah,
because Luke Skywalker, famously a perfect hero in the original three movies. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Kathleen Kennedy and Disney's way of saying, hey, let's make everyone hate the characters you fell in love with and focus on our new fluffy characters we're going to try to make a bajillion dollars on.
Right. They wanted to build up their own new plush toys.
In 7, they buried Han. In 8, they buried Luke. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to find new stories. Did you really want Han Solo across three more movies?
To end the story, then start a new saga. Then don't have it be episode 7, 8, 9.
It was a new. I mean, this is arguably the cardinal sin of the Disney trilogy, which is they decided to link it so hard into the Skywalker saga instead of just doing a new story in the Star Wars universe with new characters. Because when you do bring in those, and I think that's what they eventually wanted to get around to doing, but they did it in very sloppy fashion. And they ended up having a competing thing of the old characters versus the new characters, and they never found out how to make that balance work. And you end up with three movies that don't satisfy anyone as a coherent trilogy. And now they have to kind of start anew. And maybe they hopefully do start completely anew with completely new characters, millions of years after the Skywalkers, you know, find a new story and compelling characters. They can do it. Finn and Rey and Oscar Isaac's character, whose name I forget, and all of the stuff they were building in Force Awakens that was new was really interesting and fun. But they got lost. And Rian Johnson is a very good writer-director. The Knives Out movies are really, really excellent. People should check them out. But I think, you know, going from a movie that put the franchise back on the rails and going directly from that to a guy being like, okay, but what if the ship can go side to side and diagonal and backwards and forwards and trying to test the boundaries of storytelling in the Star Wars universe was maybe not the wisest choice,
you know,
for something
you know
that just got back on its feet.
Of all the things that offended me in 8, it was the ship with the bombs in outer space. Like, it's dropping bombs in outer space. It's outer space. There's no gravity. The fuck are we doing here? All right.
Oh, it wasn't Leia just magically floating after being obliterated.
No, like, I could have bought into that.
An important character, I'll float it and be fine.
I'm like, oh, that's sick. That spaceship is dropping bomb. Oh, wait, what? Why? Where's it? Where's the gravity going? Why does this even make any sense? I mean, it looked fucking cool, I guess, but okay, whatever. So
science.
All right, so we get through with all those. But now, and there was a bunch of spinoffs as well. Rogue One was very well received. I didn't see it. I think I saw what are the other spinoffs that came?
Solo is the only other one that made it to theaters. Again,
that's
a torturous movie to get to the big screen. The directors famously got fired, I think, about midway through.
That's Lord
the directors who went on to, Lord and Miller, who went on to do Project Hail Mary and the Spider-Verse movies, so clearly Solo's loss. They bring in Ron Howard, who is a good director, but not exactly someone you're like, hell yeah, get me Ron Howard. That really excites me. And the resulting movie isn't bad, but it's a non-existent movie.
Okay.
And so, it was a bad idea made kind of boringly.
All right, so where are we now, Josh? What are your hopes as a Star Wars nerd? Yeah. The franchise in big screens in theaters going forward.
The only saving grace, and I'm very interested to get Matt Miller's opinion on this, believe it or not, is Jon Favreau. Because that man has proven he can nerd out, right? Like, he was responsible for a lot of the original Marvel. I mean, essentially all of Marvel for
directed Iron Man.
Correct.
Created the voice of the modern MCU. Yeah.
And so the fact that they gave it to him, and correct me if I'm wrong, Matt, but doesn't he now have a bigger stake in Star Wars after Kathleen Kennedy stepped down?
I'm trying to remember how, because the Star Wars infrastructure has had so many cancellations and movements and re-movements and realignments. I mean, the canceled Star Wars projects page on Wikipedia is longer than a extended universe book. But if I know it's right now Favreau and Filoni, yeah, I believe are the kind of two head honchos. Charge,
but they are working together. So Mandalorian and Grogu is directed by Jon Favreau. So, you know, it's not, there's hope.
What if it's good, Josh?
In the Star the movie's Wars. Good.
The movie could be good.
I'm hoping it is. Here's the problem, and Matt knows this about me. I have completely been enveloped in, if you're going to give me a new movie, I need it to give a hook for me to want to continue the lineage. They're coming out with a story that's we're already pretty familiar with. We've seen this. So I'm worried about how they make me leave that movie going, oh, I need to know what happens in the next one. I need to know what happens in the next spinoff movie. That, which they absolutely could. I hope that they do. I just, my brain goes, are they going to do that? Or are they going to just include a new little plushy cute character and sell stuffed animals of it and make two? Well,
What do you want to know from either the Mandalorian himself or I guess Baby Yoda, right?
To me, it's all about Grogu.
Oh, it is.
The future is all about Grogu, because in all of the original movies, we knew Yoda as super old dude, right? Like, we saw him fight in episode 2 and we went, whoa, did everyone just see Yoda doing a bunch of flips with his lightsaber? What is happening?
That sucks.
Shut up, Matt. It's just, he just had his little cane and he just would walk around and go, and you know, and that was it. And that was Yoda. And so, like, to see his species as a baby, like, following him, seeing, like, what an adolescent age, even though that's, like, I don't know, 200 or whatever the hell it would be. Like,
was he a troublemaker? Did he smoke cigarettes?
Or, like, him becoming a leader of whatever the next movement is and being a hero. I think that has a lot of...
Okay. By the way, I'm today years old when I learned that Baby Yoda is Grogu.
This is a big problem with this movie coming out. I just want to say it is a real problem that when most people see the title of a movie being The Mandalorian and Grogu, 60-70% of the population goes, what the hell is a Grogu?
Who is Grogu? And it's like, Grogu, often called Baby Yoda. It's like, oh, that Grogu. Grogu, right. Yeah, that guy.
Oh, not. I was thinking about the other Grogu.
Right. Oh, Grogu, right. Yeah. Oh, got it. Uh-huh, right.
Yeah, this is Grogu of the Grogu Johnsons, not Grogu of the Grogu Smurfs.
Not Grogu, Grogu.
I think, okay. Josh does, because we can't speak on the movie yet because we haven't seen it yet. I will be there, depending on, you know, we'll see what the child says. But I think their big issue and why it feels like no one cares about a Star Wars movie coming out in 3 weeks is where is the hook for this movie beyond it's Mandalorian and Grogu? Like, where is the aspect of the story that feels like, wow, this is a big screen worthy story? This is why this story needed to make this leap. And that is kind of the question that Star Wars hasn't answered for itself ever since they went all in on Disney Plus series.
And here's the problem. Okay. And obviously, I love Disney. Disney owns me. Everyone knows it. We move on.
Josh has mouse ears on right now. You can't
correct.
See it, but I mean, surgically
the tattoo is on my right cheek. But the problem is that Disney couldn't get out of their own way. Disney keeps going to the well to make money. And they don't realize that they have the ability to continue. They can make a Toy Story 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and a Frozen 2 and 3 and 4.
Uh-huh.
And they can make a Star Wars spinoff and do all these things. And people will spend the money. But it's still falling short of the goals because they're doing it with the intent of merchandising. Yeah, Matt Miller's wearing the Spaceballs, the t-shirt. It's literally that's what they're doing. They're not letting the nerds make a good product for the nerds. They're right. Telling the nerds, you better make this so we can sell it because we're not selling any DVDs anymore.
And the irony is, in the very first movie, who got the rights to the merchandising because the studio didn't think they were worth shit? George Lucas. So in other words, when it all started, he was like, hey, man, I want the rights to sell like some plush toys. And the studio's like, fine, you can have it.
Yeah,
now they've twisted it completely around. I don't know. I hope it gets back to being something interesting. Maybe they should make, you know, Mandalorian Grogu like a buddy cop movie where they're cruising around the galaxy, you know, busting people for going 5 miles.
You're kind of describing the first season of The Mandalorian.
Not that far off. Yeah.
Not that far off. Okay.
With Star- I think they're
and sort of like, I'm thinking like, you know, Chris Tucker and what's his name in, what's Jeff the
Chan?
Rush Hour colon Rush space. Hour.
Yeah. Yes. Space, yeah. Space Rush Hour.
Yes, exactly.
I do think the best thing for Star Wars to do is, you know, do this Mandalorian and Grogu movie. Maybe it turns into a big screen franchise. But otherwise, the next thing is to truly start from scratch. Do a truly new Star Wars story in the world of Star Wars. Let, you know, Filoni and Favreau, like, you know, create a new story and don't be beholden to nostalgia and, you know, be beholden to the nerds, but also allow, you know, some freedom, because I mean that is part of the reason why I don't think we've gotten a Star Wars movie in a long time is because
what are we doing, where are we going, how are we going to get this?
And you're asking, if you're a director, why would you want, like, this is a baby sitting job at best now, where it's like, if I try to do something interesting with this franchise, I'm probably getting in trouble.
Yeah.
So why would I get involved? They do have a Star Wars movie coming out next year, I believe, called Starfighter, which is with Ryan Gosling. It's directed by the guy who did Deadpool and Wolverine, Sean Levy. It sounds interesting. It sounds like it's, you know, a Star Wars movie that's not attached and married to the lore, that is kind of just a cool Star Wars story about a pilot in a Star Wars movie. Will they be able to resist being like, oh, but he's secretly Boba Fett, or, oh, but secretly he's the son of Wedge Antilles, and that's why he's important? It's like, no, can't he just be his own character? And the Star Wars universe is so big. Why does everyone have to be related to the 15 characters in the original movies?
Right. Or he wanted a ship off of Lando Calrissian in an intergalactic poker game,
which is so much the problem of Solo, where like Solo is so much trying to like attach all the threads Solo lore, and it's like, this is so much less interesting than it could be.
Two other small pieces of Star Wars Nerdicon, and then we can turn to more important things, such as, are the new Brewer Wisco alternates trash or smash? I know Josh has got a thought or two on that.
Mm-hmm.
Two things, and I send this to Josh. Apparently now at the Galaxy's Edge attraction at Disneyland and Disney World, which has the, you know, Star Wars mountain with the Millennium Falcon coming out of it, right? For the first time, they're now letting Darth Vader actually appear in that world, because previously Disney just wanted all the new characters for that, and they didn't let any of the old characters stand there. Is that right?
Yeah, it was always Kylo Ren. Essentially, I don't know about at Disneyland, but at Disney World, they had a different, in Hollywood Studios, they had Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, which was, you're completely enveloped in Star Wars, but it's all Disney Star Wars. It's all the new stuff. The land, everything is 7, 8, 9.
Really? So no Darth Vader.
Nope.
No C-3PO. No
C-3PO was in 7, 8, 9 too. So
okay, no Chewbacca. No Han Solo, no Leia.
No Han.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So that kind of sucks. So the fans are like, finally, we get some of the old characters in this cool-ass, you know, replica of what it must have been like.
So then what they had is they had in a completely different area of the park, they had, like, Star Wars stuff for the old people, where they had where you could meet Darth Vader, and you could see R2-D2. Right.
But hidden in the closet.
Right. So, right.
Yeah. They're embarrassed by it. Like, yeah, okay, you old people.
It's not theirs.
That shit's way over there. Go see that. All right. Well, maybe it'll be good. So I think, Josh, you need to go back to Disney. Are you due back anytime soon to Disney?
Oh, what day is it? yeah. A couple of weeks. Probably be there in a couple of weeks.
The other thing, if Disney wants to make money, is they just need to license the Star Wars and storage. Not Storage Wars, Star Wars and Pawn Stars. Star Wars and Pawn Stars AI mashup, the video that I sent Josh. Have you seen Matt Miller?
If it's AI, probably not.
Dude,
so good.
So fucking funny. General Grievous comes in with a bag full of lightsabers. And Rick Harrison is there behind the counter. And because it's AI, it's really good. It looks filmic. And it's the worst AI we're ever going to have from now until the end of time. And he's like putting the lightsabers there and Rick's doing his thing. And Josh and I used to always laugh about this on the show. He's like, yeah, okay, interesting. Well, where'd you get these? And now suddenly General Grievous has got to go, oh, shit, estate sale. The previous owner didn't need them, so estate sale. It's like 9 lightsabers, right?
Right, right. And then all the classic excuses, right, of the, well, listen, it's going to take space up in my shop. I got to.
Yeah, no, hold on. So the first clip I sent ended with Grievous. He's like, all right, well, so what are you looking to get for these? And he's like, 100,000 credits. Credits so far.
Yeah.
And of course, Rick's like, I don't know, man. I can give you $50 for these. And then he gets angry and pulls out 2 lightsabers, and that's where it cuts. And I'm like, God damn, I wanted the full cut of it. And somebody did make the full cut where Josh, at the end of this negotiation, Rick says, well, look, I really, you know, if I have them, I got to insure them. I've got to keep them here. He does the whole song and dance brilliant. About why he can't meet the price.
It's brilliant. Like, yeah.
And it dawned on me, Josh, they could have an endless parade of Star Wars characters come in with artifactia from the movies to try to pull on.
Oh, yeah. Great. Yeah, and the thing is that this is exactly what then Disney Plus would go to. That is what Disney Plus is for. You can make a whole series of AI Star Wars Pawn Stars episodes. Yes. I would binge the whole damn thing. Absolutely. Put that on Disney Plus.
Well, and this kind of goes like this on a lesser level, but like this goes back to kind of when I remember when Disney first bought Star Wars, there was all this talk of like, okay, we're going to have this new trilogy, but then we're also going to do like some like R-rated Star Wars movies. And we're going to do like some movies about like the really like crime ridden parts of this galaxy. And we're going to do like a genuine war movie, like that has like boots on the ground and is really intense. And we're going to be able to tell like stories about like the cantina and life in the cantina. And we're going to do all these interesting things. And then that all dried up and they just focused on the nostalgia, and they just focused on this weird trilogy and that they couldn't figure out how to tell. And it's a bummer because I think there was a lot of excitement when Disney got a hold. People forget how much people hated George Lucas when Disney bought Star Wars and how much they were looking forward to somebody new getting a hold of these stories that wouldn't write, you know, dialogue about sand and how he doesn't like it because it's rough and it gets everywhere. And instead they blew it. And then they did these Disney Plus series that at best felt like they should have been movies. Like the Obi-Wan miniseries should have been a movie.
True.
It would have been a much more enjoyable 2.5 hour long feature film than stretched way out and padded and bloated. But they were so drunk on streaming. Now you have a place where they can't get people back to the big screen because everyone's like, I have Mandalorian at home, literally.
Let this be a lesson. You know, you say, I hate this guy, get rid of him, or hate so-and-so, get rid of him. The next guy, the new guy, could be fucking worse. In fact, I bet a lot of people, you know, said that about Adrian Griffin. Thank God this guy sucks. Doc Rivers, he's a proven vet. Oh, okay. Shit. I hate him even more.
Yeah. How tortured. Can I do a quick Bucks question to Josh right now?
No.
Well, I'm going. Josh, how depressed are you by the Bucks not being in this insanely wide open Eastern Conference playoffs?
This is not a quick question. This is a long question. This is a therapy session, Miller.
I'm going to answer that by saying I'm not answering that, but I did get to finally meet Giannis, and I got my photo, and so life is fine.
Mission accomplished. He could be traded this summer, and you'll be fine because you got your photo.
I got my photo. He
make
will
it
not
about you
forever.
Yeah, make it about you, Josh. Way to go. Your true hardcore fandom was never really that hardcore. You just needed the digital asset, and you finally got it. So
I worked with this one guy way too long, became obsessed with the digital assets.
I know, you're just such an avid collector of, I've got to get this, I've got to get that.
I got to get the photo, man. It's how I cope. It's how I cope.
I know. So let's talk Brewers. Two things. One, Brandon Woodruff's arm just...
Just kind of
died in the middle of an outing. The radar gun went from like the low 90s where he lives with his fastball to like the mid 80s. And people watching the game are like, is the radar gun broken? And it was like, no, he just lost 7 miles an hour of velocity. We went out for a mound visit and what's going on and let him pitch one more and it still wasn't right. And they're like, shit, we got to get him out of here. He's going to get his shit rocked if he's trying to throw fastballs at 84 miles an hour. And the thing is, they've been nursing him back for how long? A year and a half, basically.
I mean, brought him back
here for about a hot minute, and they had to shut him back down again. He's had all kinds of problems injury-wise. And they poured money into him because they could, and he was a good, loyal guy. Nobody else really wanted him. But that money was like, what, $22 million?
Yeah, $22.5 million.
Whew.
Yep. I think the scariest thing with Woody was that he just said, yeah, I mean, I didn't feel any pain. Like, it just died. That is terrifying. What?
Yeah.
Like, as sports fans, we are so used to, you can tell me what's wrong. I'll go to the Twitter doctors. I'll have them say, well, for this type of injury, it's usually a 3 to 6 week recovery time if they do this, this, and this. There's no doctor on Twitter that's telling me what happens when your arm dies.
You don't often hear a player just go like, I'm bad now, like my arm just got bad.
And then he comes out and he goes, yeah, I mean, we're gonna do some rehab. I don't think I'm gonna be out that long. What do you mean? What does that mean?
Okay,
that right now, throw a ball 90 miles per hour, throw one ball, prove to me your arm works. I don't understand how that was the diagnosis. Well, after the next day.
This is both the beauty and the curse of baseball itself, is that despite all the modern medicine and all the metrics and all the radar guns and the velocity meters and all this other tech we have, at the end of the day, there's a mystery inside every athlete's arm as to what he can actually deliver from 60 feet, 6 inches. That's why taking a pitcher out of the game when he's got a good game going, a one hitter, no hitter, something like that, is always hard for a manager because, as I like to say, there's no dipsticks for arms. Unlike your car where you can stick the dipstick in, pull it out, look at how much oil is there and go, okay, it's good. Ain't no dipstick for the arm. When it goes, it goes. And it might have gone for his whole career now for Woody, which fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Because the guy's been working his ass off to come back for a year and a half.
You feel bad for the guy. And it is a little bit of that curse of the small market thing. Because when you're the Brewers or another smaller market team, you have to place your bets carefully in terms of money. And the Brewers kind of, you know, put a little bit of bet money on Brandon Woodruff on the idea that, like, listen, he's had this tough injury. But if he comes back, we have a great pitcher on a pretty respectable contract.
Yeah.
And he keeps getting hurt and it's getting harder. Like they keep making that bet because it's a good bet. It's a better bet than, you know, overspending and then blowing up the rest of your team. But this is what happens, you know? And it seems like, I mean, if he comes back, what is he? And even if he comes back and is great, is it just going to be last year again, where come September, he's going to be like, oh no, I'm hurt again. I hope you have fun in October. I won't be there.
I think
it's tough.
I think he's like the 20th highest paid starting pitcher by AAV, 20th. And you say, well, I would have liked to have spent the money on somebody else whose arm didn't die. Okay. You want Zach Gallen? You want Shota Imanaga? I mean, like, you don't get much for 22 million. Well, their arms still work.
Okay.
But is anyone saying, I got to get to the park to see Merrill Kelly? Or, you know, Jose Berrios, like that's what it costs for a mid-level starting pitcher. That just sucks. Feel bad for him. The uniforms, a new alt was unveiled this year for the Brewers. Is it their City Connect 2, I guess it's called?
Yeah. It's the two City, two Connect. Yeah.
The City State Connect.
City State Connect. And it says Wisco in a big cursive font that is not endemic or native or makes any allusion to anything historically with the team. It looks weird to me. It's this weird tealish blue, kind of right in between all the colors of blue. I think it sucks. It's got a bunch of other baubles and patches on the thing, including a bobber on the sleeve. Ugh, hate it.
The bobber's fine.
I've been told, boys, that nobody calls it Wisco up there. That's an out-of-stater kind of thing.
So very few people, there are people that come out, the minority, but there are people that say, yeah, I call it Wisco. Not a lot of people in Milwaukee.
It's like a menu item phrase. Like you would call it like the Wisco burger, but no one like me and Josh would never be like, oh, yeah, you're heading back to Wisco this weekend.
Right. As far as the design itself, I will tell you when the leak dropped, that was the first problem, was that leaked photo of the jersey dropped. And I went, oh, that's a Mets jersey. What are we doing? We don't like the Mets. Like in general. And then my thought went to, remember that Bucks City jersey that was just blue? It was just blue.
Yes.
I mean, we spent years on the air, Zabe, talking about how that was just the worst thing. It was like, duh, we have lakes, blue. Like, yeah. The dumbest thing. And I was afraid that they went that way. When they actually dropped it, and I went to the team store and I saw all the other merch and I saw the bobber. And they showed the gradient of the sunset. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it. Summer vibes in Wisconsin are elite. I agree. It sucks here for the majority of the year. But then we go super hard in the summer because it's great. The summers are great. And so baseball happens in the summer. They're playing off of that. I get it.
So in other words, once you got within sniffing distance of gear, you were instantly overwhelmed because you love gear.
Yeah. Once he had his credit card out to buy.
I mean, everyone should always be buying all the gear.
I don't know a single version of any local team's jerseys or uniforms that you haven't fallen in love with.
Well, I just explained that blue one from the box was god awful.
Okay, so that one you did draw the line on.
Yeah, and here's the thing. A lot of the Bucks uniforms, like when you're pumping them out as fast as the Bucks were, like you're going to hit some crappy styles.
Well, that's the NBA. The NBA, team has seven jerseys now.
Here's the mistake they made. So I actually, what I got, and I didn't, sorry, I don't have the prop with me here, but is a hoodie that they made where the Wisco design is on a navy blue, and it shows that sunset gradient. It pops a lot more. And I went, I like that. And I love the bobber logo. I think the bobber logo is sick. And so I'm a big fan of that. And I think that the barrel man's okay. And so a lot of the other stuff they did. But the jersey itself, I can't get behind. Because for all the other stuff they made, when you're watching the players wear that jersey, it looks like a Mets jersey. It's the wrong blue. And the salmon as the secondary color, they call it like a mango or whatever. It's orange. It's you made a Mets jersey. When you look at like Contreras's gear that he wears, right? You see all of the colors of a sunset. His gear looks sick. The jerseys look like garbage.
It's important to note the Brewers have also been getting their asses kicked when they wear these uniforms, which has very much not endeared them.
I think they're over. I don't think they've won in them yet.
They were 0-4 at one point. And the guys are like, what's it going to take to go 0 for the year? And I think they wear them 16 times. So I doubt they'll go for the season.
I think the biggest bummer, too, is I think fans were really starting to embrace the previous City Connect jersey. Like, people were pretty good on them when they first came out. But I think they were really growing to the Brew City look and the hat, even the hat, which the logo has a lot going on. But I think people were really starting to be like, we get this as our look. And then Nike and the MLB were like, nope, no more. Taking it away. You were getting used to this? Well, it's gone now. Now you have this new jersey. And in 4 years, we're going to be doing the same thing where we're going to be like, oh, we got used to it. No, it's gone now. It's been replaced by neon orange because of traffic cones in a Wisconsin summer. Yeah. And it's like, it's
an official state flower of Wisconsin.
Yes.
Traffic cone.
We know. Matt, you know, we know someone within the Brewers organization that worked on the project. He worked on the design, and it took years. It was like over 3 years that they were working on this design. This was not something they put together in 6 months.
It's our boy Sean.
Yeah, was it? Boy Sean. And he told me that this was not Nike saying what they had to do. They gave them free reign. So they put this together, and I think, again, that the concept was not a bad concept. I think that people are going to focus on the jersey itself, obviously. And the jersey itself is the low point. I mean, when they made the big splash with these, they had custom coolers made with the logo and like a canoe and all this other stuff. And I went, oh, I would pay for that cooler. That is a sick, like the idea of the drop of the design itself, I think is a home run. They just okay. replicate it is well it, on the jersey.
Is it hitting with the fans?
No.
However, it has beat out the number of merchandise sold for the last City Connect. So the one that Matt said that everyone was a fan of, they've sold more merchandise.
So it's hitting with the fans then.
I mean, people are buying it and then complaining about it, I guess.
Yeah. The one thing Josh has,
but I'm not going to like it.
Yeah.
One thing Josh didn't hit on here is that, and for those in Wisconsin, you already know this, but like for those outside the state, like there's a real resentment on some level that the City Connect jersey became a State Connect jersey. And I think there's a large contingent of Milwaukee fans that are like, why is the tribute to our city becoming a tribute to the whole state, who frankly come into Milwaukee, watch a Brewer game, complain about Milwaukee the other 364 days of the year. Like that is what some people argue is like, why are we paying tribute to that? This is supposed to be a Milwaukee jersey.
Yeah. Well,
and I 100% understand the Brewers being like, no, we are the state's team. Like people across this state come here and enjoy and love the Brewers. You know, if this wasn't a Packer state, the Brewers would be the team number two. Easy. But there is that in Milwaukee, at least certainly there is a sense of a resentment of like, why is this not our tribute?
Josh, you're the last word on that.
Yeah, just simply they didn't understand the assignment. That's why it's so hard to call it a City Connect jersey, because it's not about the city, it's about the state. In their defense, however, there is no State Connect jersey. So if the Brewers ever wanted to do this, they'd have to do it as a City Connect. I just would have gone, okay, well then you can't do it, because this is
Connect. Will MLB approve a third version, a City Connect 3.0 in the future?
They already have.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they just shuffle through these. This was the year that the Brewers and a few other teams
have a third City Connect already out.
I think the Dodgers might already actually, and maybe the Red Sox. Like
fuck those guys.
Yeah,
like the big market teams get a lot of the like stuff first. I think Arizona might be on their third round too. Like, and if it hasn't happened already, it's going to, because like Josh said, for a jersey people don't even like that much, it's busted the previous sales.
What are you gonna do next summer when there's no baseball? I mean, that town loves the Brewers so much and going to the games. When this year long lockout happens, God help you boys. I have no idea what you're gonna do to fill.
Don't talk about that.
Don't talk about
alcoholism.
Don't talk about it.
Well, it's endemic. Even more alcoholism is what I'm saying.
I was going to say it'll be alcoholism without the show, without the excuse. It'll just be us in parking lots drinking.
As Josh once said very smartly, baseball is boring, but it happens a lot. So you got to take the happening a lot. All right, let me end on this. Spirit Airlines goes under. Thoughts?
It was a dagger. It was a dagger to the Albrecht family. So full disclosure for everyone that goes, Josh, you guys go to Disney all the time. How do you afford it? Spirit Airlines. That's how we afford it. We go super duper cheap. I try to explain to people, you can go to the Wisconsin Dells. You can drive from Milwaukee to Wisconsin Dells and blow $700 on a weekend with the rate of the room and everything else. If we already have our annual passes, and we're flying for $70 a person round.
I was going to say, what was your typical round trip on Spirit to Orlando?
Julie is so good. She would always, every day, she would be looking at the flights. And she would find flights that would be anywhere from $58 to $90 a person round trip.
Holy shit! From Milwaukee nonstop?
So this is the battle we've been going through. So it started when we first started doing this. They did fly direct from Milwaukee to Orlando. That was prime. They stopped flying from Milwaukee, and we would have to drive to O'Hare. It was still okay. We could do that. We would park at overnight parking at O'Hare. It cost maybe another $100, but we would still save a ton of money in comparison to flying any other airline.
Yeah, yeah, you're under $100 per head. Round trip. You're in the ballpark.
Right. Now, so we could do a family trip to Disney minus the tickets, because we already have our annual pass. Yes, I understand that's Disney math, but we could do it for $600-$700 for the whole family for a 4-day trip, including flight.
And now what?
Our cheapest hotel, cheap flights. We'd bring snacks into the park. Now it's gone. Well, now we have Frontier. Not as good as Spirit in terms of pricing. And or we buck up and we got to go with Southwest, or which people have been not fans of Southwest since they changed their stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't understand people that go, oh, I get a Southwest flight sometime for $100. Not out of Milwaukee, you don't. Where the hell do you live? So it's gonna very much hurt the idea of, I don't need to bring stuff. I just need you to get me from point A to point B. It's gonna suck. And I'll tell you, now that Spirit's gone, all those other places, they go less competition. You're gonna see.
I was just gonna say.
It's, yeah, that was a bad move.
JetBlue's already swooping up routes to South Florida and other parts of Florida, because that was prime for Spirit. They used to go there a lot. So
yeah, until JetBlue fails next, and then Frontier. And before you know it, we'll have two or three airlines, and it'll cost $800 a person. I'll be stupid.
I know. Wait, would you ever consider, perhaps, I know this sounds crazy, but scaling back your Disney business?
Don't say dumb things. Like, stop it. Stop.
Your youngest boy is now 2 years old?
Almost two. He is at the prime age. He loves cars. Loves cars. And, like, I'm so excited the next time we go there. There's a hotel on Disney property that has life-size Cars Land up with the cars. He is going to just lose his
mind.
And that is what it's all about.
And Jordy is now 8?
Jordy will be 10 in October.
Man. What?
Yeah, Jordy. He's practically.
How is he with Disney? Because he's been probably a dozen times now.
He's been a billion times. The thing is that now, like, he loves the thrill rides, right? So now he wants to go with Julie on Guardians of the Galaxy and get whipped around and have all the fun. So that's why it still works for our family, and it will at least for another 5 or 6 years. But to your point, with Spirit gone, I don't know that we're going to be taking many more of these random weekend trips. There's just not going to be those cheap getaway flights.
If Jordy's getting into the thrill rides, could you start, like, nudging him towards Great America and, like, Cedar Point? Could you, like, start nudging him towards some of those, like, him towards, like, well, if you like thrill rides.
I know.
What about
Julie brought up the idea of going to getting an annual pass for Six Flags, because apparently it's like $12 or something stupid. They're so
desperate. Six Flags down in Gurnee.
Yeah, I know. It's just the problem is, like, even for me, I'm like, ugh.
I won't hear this raging bull slander.
You people, this is gross.
Were you a child in the Midwest if you weren't abused by Iron Wolf the ride? Like, he's got to have that formative experience.
I don't even think Iron Wolf exists anymore. I know. Matt, it's probably been 20 years since you've been there.
Groins everywhere have been saved by this development.
That's true.
All right. Well, boys, it was wonderful to connect with both of you. Josh, glad you are thriving, my friend, as a young parent of two now. Matt's going to join you as a young parent of one here any day now. And may the 4th always be with you, fucking nerds. And let's hope they fix Star Wars, okay?
God, please fix Star Wars.
Amen. Amen.
Let's end today's monster episode with some emails and feedback. Lots of good feedback from all different parts of the country and also on various topics. We'll start with Joseph Appel. Headline, Pittsburgh's handling of the Big Dick Complex, the Draft Industrial Complex, the DIC. Steed, longtime fan of 15 years. When I heard today's pod about Pittsburgh and the draft, I wanted to weigh in as a lifelong Yinzer. I rolled my eyes when I heard we were hosting the draft and all the local media coverage in the past year. I normally laugh at the extent of greed produced by the Shield. However, after it was all said and done, oh boy, here it comes, I came away with a very positive perspective, as did almost every person I spoke with. A few points that changed my perspective, and I disagree with the article you mentioned.
One, you ask who really wants to go hear names called. I agreed until I saw it firsthand with all my son's friends. I have coached my three sons' football teams for the last 10 years, and every boy between the ages of 8 and 16 seemingly went and loved it. There were a ton of football activities, trading card giveaways, getting to run around on Acrisure Field, autographs, and more. It was a young boy's Woodstock, as Andy might say. Furthermore, I heard it compared to WWE's WrestleMania. WrestleMania has become corporate and over the top, but it's a national meeting of wrestling fanatics, similar to the draft. Was the draft my cup of tea personally to attend? No, but it's not marketed for a 40-year-old dad. Number two, Pittsburgh Public Schools. The teachers' union here goes to remote learning at the drop of a hat. Too cold? Remote learning. Too hot? Remote learning. Too windy? Remote learning. So it was just like another day in the neighborhood. Well, that's a larger problem right there, that these teacher unions have too much fucking control and they can say, oh, we're not coming in today. This notion that remote learning is a thing, you're not learning shit when you're remote, okay? That was proven in the aftermath of the pandemic and literally lost generations of kids that are not quite back to where they were in terms of their development, their education, their socialization, because of the fucking pandemic response. Number three, overall, many of the businesses complaining about lack of foot traffic were not on the North Shore, where the draft was actually located. It's not surprising that every business district in the city large as this did not see increased business. We just had the large Pittsburgh Marathon last weekend, and they closed roads for 2 days, and certain businesses boomed while others had less traffic. It seems to come with the territory of hosting large events. Overall, the reports out there suggest it had a positive economic impact. Well, okay, I guess. I mean, yeah, there'll always be somebody who says it was a positive economic impact, but can you really judge it? Now, as far as other events like, you know, the marathon or stuff, I know streets do get closed from time to time. Just want to share my two cents, which went from a negative outlook to actually positive. Appreciate all the years of great entertainment. Thank you, Joey in Pittsburgh. P.S. I have listened to the pod since day one. I never felt compelled to give a feedback about a guest and even could find something interesting and positive about lesser liked guests such as Ron Thomas or Glenn Eunice. But the one guest who is a wet blanket is Butchie. You do everything you can to try to bring out entertainment from him, but he comes off as a lumbering bore. Oh, poor Butchie. I have an affinity for Butchie that knows no bounds because I know him personally and I really like him personally in many ways. Kevin Stanazuski, Savannah Bananas. Zabe took my boys about 6 or 7 years ago to a home game in Savannah before they started to, you know, travel. It was $15 to get in, and that included all the hot dogs, all the hamburgers, popcorn, nachos, and Coke you could eat or drink. Well, of course it's going to be popular with the kids. Before the game, as I went to the parking lot to the stadium, players were handing out popsicles to fans as they walked in. Very cool. As me and the boys were walking to our seats, we decided to just go straight to the concession stand. About three people in front of us is a guy in his early 20s with a baseball uniform. Not the Savannah Bananas, but a full-on baseball uniform. He's waiting in line ahead of us. I thought, what the hell's wrong with this dude? Is he a little nuts? Bring a baseball uniform to a game? Like, come on. So we go to our seats, the game starts, and son of a bitch, if the guy who wasn't waiting in line ahead of us at the concession stand was now hitting second for the other team playing the Bananas. That is no bullshit. After the game, outside the stadium, all the Banana players were signing autographs, the line dancing with the crowd, taking pictures with kids, etc. Kids had a great time and I enjoyed myself also. Personally, I'd never go again unless the kids brought it up, but that's just me. It's like watching the Harlem Globetrotters, but even more interactive. Kevin, thank you for that report. I don't doubt that that is exactly the vibe that they still bring to these events. So good for the Bananas, and good for those of you that went and enjoyed it, whether it was a more intimate sort of setting or whether it was at a madhouse like Texas A&M. Then there is this. Chris Gerard, regarding the Derby. Dear Zabe, the dead certain lock and load Triple Crown winner that wasn't. You may have heard of him, Big Brown. Golden Tempo's acceleration was awesome indeed, but maybe you remember Big Brown, the 2008 Kentucky Derby and 2008 Preakness winner, who came up just short in a highly controversial fashion at the Belmont. Well, not just short, but he came up short. It was a big deal because in 2008, there had been no Triple Crown winner for 30 years. And Big Brown, after dominating the Preakness and the Derby, was a shoe-in to get the Triple Crown. What makes the story extra spicy is the fact that Big Brown's trainer, Richard Dutrow, was quite the blowhard. Big Brown won both the Derby and Preakness going away and absolutely obliterated the other horses. His win at Preakness was especially electrifying. Do yourself a favor and watch this 2008 Preakness race clip I sent to you via YouTube. Big Brown coming into the turn just accelerates like an F-16 and wins by 4 to 5 lengths. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's the horse version of Usain Bolt. Skip ahead to the 30-20 mark on this link, and they'll show you an overhead shot from the MetLife blimp that just showcases the incredible speed of Big Brown. There was talk about a Japanese horse that could pose a threat in the Belmont, and Dutrow said, quote, "All those Japanese people, they thought that Godzilla was dead." You know what's going to happen here, don't you? In the build-up to the Belmont, Dutrow was cocky and not afraid to tell everyone about it. At this time, 2008, there had been no Triple Crown winner since 78, as I said. Hubris and overconfidence can sometimes come back to bite you hard. Big Brown not only lost the Belmont, but he just basically slowed down about halfway through the race. The jockey then deliberately eased him up, thinking he was injured, and he finished in last place. Yet to this day, nobody can really explain it. He wasn't really injured. He did injure a hoof before the Belmont, but it was treated and everyone agreed it would not affect his ability to race. Afterwards, the veterinarian could find no obvious injury to explain why he slowed down. Some people were aghast that a jockey would deliberately ease up a horse that was competing for a Triple Crown win. The jockey said that he felt something was just wrong and did not want to possibly injure the horse. I remember the TV coverage vividly. Cameras followed the horse back to wherever it is they go after a race. You know, back to the stall to smoke a cigarette and decompress, that's later. And they caught someone losing their mind and shouting like a maniac, probably Dutrow the trainer. They quickly cut away. Big Brown won every other race in his career, but he lost the biggest one for inexplicable reasons. It's too bad because that was one special horse. You're not, thank you, Chris Gerard, Cincinnati, Ohio. You're not implying that Big Brown actually threw the Belmont? It's not like you can throw the Belmont to make some better. I mean, I guess you could probably fashion a ticket that is an anti-Big Brown ticket to cash in if he's going to definitely throw the race. I don't know if there has been obviously cheating in horse racing at multiple levels. Shockers in the butt end of the riding crops. There have been people who have hacked the OTA computer system to post bets ex post facto after races had already been run and they were winning these crazy multi-leg, you know, win, play, show type bets. I don't know if I've ever heard of a scandal where a horse or a jockey tanked a race upon the whim or the direction of somebody who had a big stake in them not winning. Horse racing being too chaotic and too unpredictable to begin with, except for when you've got a super horse like this, that you really can't do that kind of a thing on a regularity. But wow. Maybe it was just like this movie I once saw about this weird countercultural, soon-to-be American icon by the name of Forrest, who one day decided he wanted to start running. But then, all of a sudden, out in the middle of nowhere, decided, I think I'm done running.
That day, for no particular reason, I decided to go for a little run. So I ran to the end of the road. And when I got there, I thought maybe I'd run to the end of town.
President Carter, suffering from heat exhaustion, fell into the arms
of... When I got there, I thought maybe I'd just run across Greenbow County. And I figured since I run this far, maybe I'd just run across the great state of Alabama. And that's what I did.
Quiet. He's going to say something.
I'm pretty tired. Think I'll go home now.
And I, too, am going to go home. I'm not tired, but I had a good time today. Thank you so much for listening. Spread the word. Rate and review. It helps tickle the algorithmic overlords. Thanks to Andy. Thanks to Josh and Matt. It was a good time connecting with all people. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great Tuesday, everybody, and we will see you next time.
You may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. You may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife. And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
Letting the days go by. Let the water hold me down. Letting the days go by. Water flowing under.
The betting calendar is absolutely loaded right now. Baseball in full swing. NBA, NHL playoffs already underway. If you want to get really spicy, you can even bet the WNBA. Look, I'm not judging. Action's action. The question is, where are you betting? Because that matters just as much as what you're betting. That's why I go to mybookie.ag, and why you should too. New to MyBookie? Use promo code ZABE on your first deposit. If your first bet loses, you get a full refund up to $500 back in free play, plus $25 in casino credit just for showing up. MyBookie.ag, promo code ZABE. Check the site for offer details and to confirm availability in your state. Bet smart, get paid.